This is the Women's Protection and Empowerment Podcast, where we give space to talking about women and girls in humanitarian settings. I'm Christy Crabtree. Today is International Women's Day, a day to celebrate the social, political, economic, and cultural achievements of women. It's also a call to action for gender equality. And this year, March 8th, will also be remembered as a day without a woman, a demonstration by women and allies acting in the name of human rights, justice, and equity to recognize the enormous and impactful value that women bring to our socioeconomic system. Janine Cawson, IRC's Senior Policy and Advocacy Officer for Women's Protection and Empowerment, joins me today to talk about the impact of recent political dynamics on women and girls. Welcome, Janine.
Thanks, Christy. Happy to be here.
To start us off, could you tell us a little bit more about what your position in advocacy entails?
Sure, happy to. As you mentioned, I'm the Senior Policy and Advocacy Officer for Women's Protection and Empowerment. And what this really means is I work closely with our program staff, our specialists, our emergency responders, and our country teams to advocate for strong policies and programs to support the women and girls with whom we work. So essentially what I do is I take what we know from our programs, from our research, and from our experience working with women and girls around the world and in the U.S., and I try to translate that into tangible asks, advocacy requests that we want to make of governments, of donors, of UN agencies and others in the humanitarian community. And in some cases, in many cases, in fact, this is really related to increased funding or more effective use of existing funding. For example, ensuring that dedicated funding for addressing violence against women and girls is directed to emergency situations in Yemen or in Boko Haram territory, or in protracted crises like Syria or South Sudan. But it also means creating new policies or revising existing policies for how decision makers address the issue of violence against women and girls. So, for instance, over the past 2 years, worked with a coalition of others to advocate for the U.S. government's strategy to empower adolescent girls globally, which is celebrating its first birthday next week. And so making sure that strategies and policies like this are reflective of the unique needs and experiences of adolescent girls in humanitarian settings as well. So in a nutshell, advocating with a host of decision makers around both funding issues as well as policy and strategies.
So today being International Women's Day, can you talk more about the impact of current events on women and girls?
Sure. I think clearly one need look no further than the evening news or one's social media feed to see that we are facing unprecedented displacement in the world. There are 65 million people who are currently displaced by violence and upheaval today. But what's often missing from what we're seeing around news stories and discussions around this is really what that impact is having on women and children. And this is a major omission, considering that if you look at who's most impacted by displacement, it's women and children. They make up 75% of those who are displaced. And so despite the fact that women and girls in particular are uniquely impacted by conflict and disaster in ways that men are not, and this could range from experiencing gender-based violence or restrictions on their mobility, which literally makes them invisible in crises. And that, of course, makes it less likely that they will have access to support like food or education or economic opportunities. So despite the fact that we have these gendered dynamics and impacts, women's and girls' voices are really rarely heard. And I'm based here in Washington, and we see this most prevalent these days in the rhetoric that's coming out of the political dynamics here in Washington. And so what we're trying to do is really bring a gender lens to this discussion. So if you look at restrictions on refugee resettlement or on budget cuts to domestic and humanitarian programs, it's really women and girls who are going to bear the brunt of those decisions more than anyone else, whether it's overseas or here in the United States. So a couple of examples of just how I've been trying to look at this and advocate here in Washington, it's if we look at just the refugee admissions program, the U.S. has a very successful program of resettling refugees to the United States. And as we know, there have been a series of executive orders that have been signed to do a number of things, including one that just happened this week, which suspends the refugee admission program and really targets refugees from certain countries, and looking at how this will really harm the very people who need our protection and support the most. If we just look at last year, the U.S. resettled 85,000 refugees. 72% of them were women and children. So many of these folks who come to the United States are single mothers, they're survivors of gender-based violence, or they are folks who need urgent medical care. They are not terrorists who aim to do our country harm. They really are people escaping the very tyranny and insecurity that we're trying to guard against. So that's one particular impact of policies around refugee resettlement. Again, the largest number of folks that are coming to the United States under this program are women and children. If you suspend that program, you're impacting women and children. The second big issue is really around budget, and there are budget discussions that are ongoing in Washington, and we're expecting to see the first draft of the new president's budget in the coming week or next week. And so we're looking at what does that mean in terms of scaling back U.S. foreign assistance funding for frontline humanitarian programs. And this funding comes out of State Department, it comes out of USAID, it comes out of the UN. And when you scale back on this funding, really it's going to translate into fewer women and girls receiving critical life-saving medical care for sexual assault or intimate partner violence. It's going to mean fewer safe spaces for them to receive trauma counseling and livelihoods and empowerment programming. But it's also, it's not just overseas funding, it's also domestic funding. I think probably a lot of folks have seen rumors floating around related to grants that are authorized under the Violence Against Women Act. And these grants really provide legal assistance. They provide transitional housing. They provide dedicated programming that is done in a culturally sensitive and specific way to underserved communities. And if these grants are cut completely, the vital services that local domestic violence organizations provide will be cut as a result. And refugee women also benefit from those programs, and they'll be left without ongoing support they need as they transition to their new life in the United States. The last one I would point out is really beyond policies and beyond funding. There's this harmful rhetoric on women's rights that is proliferating throughout the United States. And we're really concerned about the increase in hate crimes and the weakening of legal rights in the United States. The U.S. has had a long-standing reputation of being a safe space for the most vulnerable and marginalized individuals, many of whom are women and girls. But this harmful rhetoric and these actions that have become prevalent in the current political climate are really making the safe space come under attack. And this is whether it's condoning misogynistic behavior or limiting women's access to reproductive health care, or really just normalizing the marginalization of women's role in society. These actions are really undermining the hard-fought gains that women and girls have achieved around the world.
How do you see advocacy being a tool to share that message?
I've been doing advocacy and policy my entire career, and as much as I love it, not everyone gets it, and that's okay. You know, sometimes we speak in a way that doesn't really resonate with people who don't work in this field. Yet, if you step back and think about it, in some way, somewhere, everyone is affected by what's going on around them. And really, all advocacy is using your voice to try to influence change. It's not rocket science. Anyone can do it. You just have to really identify a problem or an issue that matters to folks and work with them to figure out what a reasonable solution is. From there, it's just a matter of identifying who has the power to make that happen and developing a compelling message that will allow people to relate to that issue. From my whole career in advocacy, for the most part, and for most people, it's literally just sharing your personal story about how you are personally affected by something and what you want folks to do about it. But for others, and this is particularly the case for the work that IRC does, which we work on issues of conflict and disaster. And fortunately, many of the people in the countries where we work, in the United States or in Europe, fortunately, they have never had to experience these issues directly themselves. And so for these reasons, you really have to bring those issues to light in a more visible way because they don't necessarily have a personal connection. And I see really that's one way where the media comes in. And you know, through the power of the media, we have the opportunity to share stories in a way that brings to light the conditions in which women and girls live in the countries where we work. It's not just about the challenges or about the violence they experience. Those for sure are huge issues that we can't ignore. But it's also about telling women's stories of courage, of resiliency, of power and determination. The women and girls we work with aren't helpless. They aren't victims. They're strong and they're brave and they're powerful survivors. And that side of the story is hardly ever shared. So as advocates, you can lobby policymakers. You can literally call your members of Congress. Those of us who do this as a living, we write a lot of policy briefs. We do a lot of research reports, and we try to utilize the media to bring to light some of these stories. And that could be through traditional media sense of letters to the editor or opinion editorials, but it can also be really creative outlets like using photography or videography or social media to highlight some of these stories. And there are millions of stories that are just waiting to be told. And one of my favorite authors, Chimamanda Adichie, says, there's a danger in a single story, and you can't let a single story define a group of people, including refugee women and girls. And we know many of them face similar circumstances, but their experiences cannot really be narrowly focused on just one experience or one story or one stereotype, especially if the only story that's ever told, and this is the case more often than not, is one of victimhood. And so it's really about looking across all of their experiences, across all of their stories, and utilizing that to influence decision makers, to make the decisions we want to see made on behalf of refugee women and girls.
That really resonates for me, advocacy as a tool and the impact that's possible there. What would you say is your intended impact?
My intended impact is really quite simple. It's literally to motivate people to act. And so when I look at the audiences with whom I try to do advocacy, it's policymakers for sure. It's donor governments. It's humanitarians, other folks who are working in this field. It's the media. And in particular, more and more these days, it's really the general public. And that's where we bring in the media here to help influence the general public. And I think it's really important, can't just accept defeat, but we really do have the power to bring about change. But you have to really be smart and strategic about it, and we have to take responsibility for it. I think what happens time and time again is people look out at the news and they just get overwhelmed with there's so many problems and there's so many issues, and where do you even start, and what can one person really do? And it's hard, and it takes a really, really long time, but that doesn't mean you don't do it. Some of the most important things we do in our lives are also the hardest, and they take the longest to achieve, yet somehow, if it's important enough to us, we find a way to do them. And that's all I'm asking here, is really to do that same strength and fortitude and patience. And it's really about, instead of sitting back and thinking and just accepting defeat from the beginning, it's about buckling down and reading more and listening more and acting more. And that can be manifested in many different ways. And it could be just keeping up with the news, or it could be attending rallies or writing postcards or letters or visiting a local center in your community and learning about what's happening there and how you can help to bring other people into the fold. And this idea of defeat is often one, like I said, that really stops people in their tracks. And it just reminded me of a saying that I really try to live when I'm doing this work. It goes like this. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. And that really speaks to that effort of, we can't all individually solve all the world's problems, but it doesn't mean we just absolve ourselves of responsibility. We can take many, many little steps. And together, all of us who are taking many, many little steps create this tsunami of advocacy and activism that you can't really deny.
So maybe one of those little steps would just be reading something after listening to this podcast. So can you direct listeners? Where can they read more?
Sure. I would first direct folks to IRC's webpage. We have rescue.org, but we also have a very dedicated microsite that is looking at women's protection and empowerment. And that website is gbvresponders.org. And we have a specific tab on that website that talks about policy and advocacy. And you can look at everything from policy briefs to media pieces and media hits. Every time we're quoted in the media or we've done an opinion editorial or something to that nature, you can find all of that information there, as well as a lot of program specific tools and research on that microsite. In honor of International Women's Day, we're also going to be talking about a lot of the things that I just talked about today around the gendered impacts of the political climate. And we will have a piece on the blog site Medium that will be featuring a lot of what I just mentioned around the gendered impacts. And then hopefully we'll have something on Huffington Post as well that will be speaking to the same issues. And I think it's also just a matter of wherever you are in the U.S. or overseas, paying attention to your local media feeds as well. It's not just about the national news, but it's about what's happening in your local communities and seeing how you can make a difference there. That's really, really a very easy critical step in just paying attention to local news. And particularly if you're not seeing something in the local news that you know should be a story, writing out to those media outlets and asking them to feature women refugees who've been resettled in your community and talk about the impact they're having on the community in a positive way.
Thanks, Janine. So Medium, Huffington Post, Rescue.org, GBBResponders.org, checking out your local media, and even demanding that they're writing more about this. Thank you so much for joining us, Janine.
Thanks for having me, Christy. My pleasure.
It's so important that we're creating space to talk specifically about these impacts on women and girls. So thanks for listening. And we leave you with one of our WPE voices sharing why they do this work.
My name is Esther Kale, Women and Child Protection Assistant Coordinator, Liberia. Being a part of the Women Protection Empowerment Program means a lot to me because I am a part of a great team advocating for equal access to opportunities and services for women and girls at all levels.
Safety, voice, respect. Join the WPE movement.